Oh, there's no, we just talk. So.
Oh, that's right. Here we are. We're podcasting.
You're podcasting. Yeah, which I kind of like. Yeah.
Yeah.
No pressure. Yeah. No intro. Don't have to be on our guard. It doesn't matter.
No music. Just chilling and talking.
Well, there is music. We just can't hear it at the moment. We have two special people, and probably everybody recognizes one of those voices. But we also have Hello. Eric Ford.
Hi there.
From Vermont. Hi there.
Hello.
And we also have Mark Herney. You may have heard of him.
Hello, hello.
Hello. So we're doing a semi-live cast. You guys are sitting together like we did for Carnival of Souls.
That's right. Yeah, Eric's a second-time guest. We did Carnival of Souls on Criterion Close-Up.
Yeah, it's great to be back.
Yeah, they're really snuggly. I can see them.
Yeah, we're sitting close, cuddled together here.
I hope my breath doesn't stink.
I haven't noticed it yet. I'll let you know.
You let me know.
Yeah.
There should be a breath-o-meter.
Yeah.
So, welcome to this new show, Eric. It's a little different, and I know you like Criterion, but I don't know how into Criterion you are. So hopefully you can find a few things to talk about.
Yeah, I'm like a fringe kind of guy. You know, I have a collection. It's small.
Yeah,
okay. but I do.
It's why we brought Eric on for Multiple Maniacs. I mean, it's a perfect title.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because that's us. It describes us.
Yeah, exactly.
There's more than one maniac here.
That's actually the podcast. So,
yeah,
perfect.
Well, anyway, we kind of kick off and get warm with just talking about what we've been doing lately. So I'll start with you. And by the way, we go alphabetical, although I'll probably have to mix it up sometimes. But Eric, what you been up to?
Well, this might be weird to talk about on a Criterion-related podcast, but I don't know if this is a confession or an admission, but I've been collecting VHS.
We're here for you, Eric. That's...
I mean, I've always been a collector, but it seems, you know, like, why? Why would you do this? well, I don't know. Maybe it's a compulsion. But we
have to collect something.
Right.
Yeah.
Sure. You know, it's something that I used to collect, obviously, and I kind of repurchased things as a movie collector on different formats. And, you know, being a, you know, I'm a huge fan of horror and cult sci-fi mm-hmm. films you know, going to video stores is not something that you can do anymore. So I think a big part of it for me is nostalgia, you know, obviously just being able to have something tactile and seeing those titles that intrigued me, you know, in the horror section of video store when I was a mm-hmm. kid.
Yeah. Yeah. Those titles that you couldn't rent, but you know, you just wanted to grab and bring home, but sneak away from mom and dad.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And it's interesting, you know, so finding I've found some communities online. Of course, there's a great horror VHS collector group on Facebook. It's like 14,000 strong.
That's cool.
It's a big group. So right away I found a bunch of people that are very like-minded and, you know, trading and purchasing tapes from each other. And it's kind of amazing the market, actually. I've tried to, you know, what you would call wild finds is the most exciting. So when you go to a thrift store, you know, a junk shop, a flea market, and you're able to find tapes for maybe a quarter or 10 cents. I've even bought tapes for a dime you know, they're actually maybe worth, some tapes, the very rare tapes are $200 to $300 actually,
that's crazy.
It is crazy. Not that I will not
in a good way
for it.
Right.
It is. Yeah. There's a really rare horror fits, you know, for some reason, shot on video horror from the early 90s is mm-hmm. often the most valuable because it's honestly, you know, never made it off that format, which is another exciting part about this. What I've discovered is that, you know, there's really that gap between no video store and streaming that's left a lot of films just languishing on VHS. And actually, I feel kind of like an archivist, like I'm saving
saving film
things.
Yeah,
these
no.
horrible films that no one wanted enough to re-release them. So it's, you know, finding, you know, these trashy films, they're exciting. I love that, you know, the patina on the tapes, actually, the bent edges, the worn edges, the rental stickers.
Yeah.
There's actually
just adds to the
Yeah, there's this great VHS blog called Lunch Meat, and they actually are working on a book collecting a collection of these rental stickers, actually, because even that's interesting, you know, to see all the, you know, like the little green horror sticker or whatever on the tape. So I don't know. I'm having a blast. And the thing is, I forgot how much damn room those VHS things have. And they're heavy.
They're like doubly as thick as a DVD on your shelf. So yeah.
Right. And so there's a limitation there. You know, I have to hold myself back. But yeah, I can't wait for – we live in Vermont, so it's not quite yard sale season. I'm a little bit envious of people in the South and the Midwest that
– do that all
just can go out there and find great stuff all year round. So I'm getting excited for the flea markets yard and sale yard season. Sales. It's going to be fun.
Okay. You just like buy collections pretty much?
Yeah, I think, you know, that's the thing. I mean, you can really, you can go on Craigslist and, you know, find a collection and you can get stuff really cheap and kind of cherry pick through, but it's, you know, you just, you kind of, you know, you look for titles, you start narrowing it down. Now I'm looking for different distributors. There's a, you know, a list of, you know, like Prism, Lightning, Magnum, Wizard Video, you know, those big boxes.
Oh, yeah.
You know, remember those? So it's fun if you get in, it's exciting. Paragon is another one. And it's just fun. It's just fun, you know.
Yeah, no,
it's a hobby, but
absolutely get it.
I'm watching them too. You know, that's the thing is that to, and again, that gets back to the whole like this is a Criterion related.
Yeah, probably so, not HD's not probably not not with your VHS tapes.
No, and you know that's the thing. Again, I'm not collecting films. You know, I'm collecting movies. There's a difference. And it's not, you know, I'm not going to get, you know, I'm not going to get a big blockbuster, you know, or some of my favorite cinematic films. I'm getting cheesy, schlocky, horror, sci-fi, cult, you know, films that, that actually there's a kind of, again, it's nostalgia, but that, you know, trashy quality with some tracking issues and, and you know, all those things, it's kind of part of it. So
it's the experience.
And
this is stuff we were talking earlier too. I mean, you never know. Arrow might release it at some point or some other distributor.
Or
you know,
88 stuff films. In fact, I see on Facebook or forums or whatever that they have conversations about which VHS rarity should these distributors go after. So I think they probably frequent the same little communities just for a different motive. So
definitely I mean, and that's the, you know, and I'll make judgments about what I want to collect based on what's available, and that's, I'm actually starting to narrow it down to things that really are lost on VHS, and that's kind of my primary interest.
Which makes sense.
We were just talking about, there's a film called The Black Room from the early 80s, I think it's like 83, and Linnea Quigley's in it. It's like this kind of pseudo vampire film. And it's a, you know, it's one of the video nasties. It's on that original kind of list of films that were banned in the UK, and it's just, it's not available.
Cool.
Never made it off of VHS, and it could be rights issues. It could be just interest. Maybe they can't find a good print. Who knows what? You know, there's a lot of things that go into those decisions that companies make, like Vinegar Syndrome and Arrow and other folks releasing this kind of niche stuff. But I don't know. It's just, it's a blast, and it's a great community. That's the best part. Is finding these freaks like me that are
they're out there
weird stupid movies that that not everyone wants to see. So.
Right. And here's where we need you know, we really need Keith Enright to help us with the VHS part of it, cuz Criterion did release, I forget, one or two titles, or they had a very short run, but they just went right to the Laserdisc. That's where they started. So
So Mark, what have you been up to?
Well, I've been actually hadn't been podcasting for a while. I hadn't talked to you, Aaron, for a while. So I kind of, you know, started twitching and stuff.
Sorry, man.
From withdrawal. But I did join, as I do every couple of months, I join First Time Watchers. So the last time I was on there was for talking about the best of 2016, or our favorites, I should say. And I was on Wednesday, the show's out there, to talk about the ScarJo joint Ghost in the Shell. So I got out to see that with my daughter. I showed both my kids the trailer. My son said, "That just looks weird. I'm out." My daughter said, "That looks kind of like a book that I read, so I'm in." And we had fun. It's fun. Cool. It's, I can't say it's a good movie, but you know, it's it's worth seeing just for the visuals. It was a reason for me too, just to go back and watch the. I'd only seen the original anime from 1995 once, and I wasn't taken by it at the time because I was expecting more of like an action anime, and this is just it's a sci-fi talkie anime with some nice visuals. So it was fun to go back and revisit that, and we had a. Had a good good discussion. Oh, and we talked about the Before trilogy too. You know, of course, folks may or may not know Tim Costa's a big. That's his favorite trilogy, probably his favorite movies. So we actually spent a good amount of time on the Before trilogy. So worth
nice
little Criterion connection there.
Yeah, I picked that up, and that there was like that pricing error.
That's right.
Way
right.
back on Amazon. And I was so excited to get that in the mail. I was like, yes.
Yes.
That's a win. Yeah. That's a double win. Yeah,
yeah, that was a gem. So I was just out of curiosity. I was Googling, and there's a VHS of Alphaville. So maybe we need to get Doug on that. So,
oh, wow. Yeah. Well,
and 39 Doug Steps. So yeah, there is some.
That's cool. How about you, Aaron? What have you been up to?
Well, I do this a lot, so I've been doing this. Last week I was out of town, so I've since been getting caught up on new movies. Well, kind of new movies. I watched Suicide Squad for the first time finally, and it was worse than I expected, which was saying something. I watched The Purge, which I hadn't seen before, and actually I thought it was fun. It wasn't anything mind-blowing, but in fact, what's silly is I watched it just so I could rewatch a Rick and Morty episode about The Purge.
Priorities, Aaron. I like your priorities.
I watched 20th Century Women, which was actually just okay. It wasn't as good as I expected.
I want to see that.
I do too.
Watched Takeshi Miike, Rainy Dog, which is really good. I've been catching up, and we're in the middle of watching Silence. That's a long one, so we had to break that up into two nights. We'll finish that tonight, but it's gorgeous. Looks great on the 4K TV. So
yeah, I'm kind of bummed that I missed that in the theater.
Me too.
See that.
Yeah, it's one of those. It's just hard to get out. I mean, it's hard to get jazzed to go see a 2.75-hour movie.
Right,
yeah.
That's the thing. That's why we didn't see it. So, but no, it's a good home experience too. If you have a nice TV, even if you don't, it looks good. Yeah. So okay, well, let's get right into it. Was it this week or no? A couple weeks ago, Multiple Maniacs came out. And Mark, you wrote a review. In fact, I meant to read that review. I'm sorry.
It's okay. You could just say you did. It's fine.
Right.
I love that review, Mark.
It was really good.
Tremendous.
So insightful. It was amazing.
You really got to the essence of that film.
I like the several points that you made.
Yeah. I think you said it was weird and black and white and improv. Actually, it wasn't improv. So anyway, this is really my... I'm kind of a John Waters newbie. I've seen a couple of his, but I've seen the later ones that are not as weird, or they're more just indie weird. Of course, Hairspray, which is actually pretty benign compared to, I think, most. So this was basically a what the fuck moment for me watching this. So anyway, well, Mark, since you reviewed it, what did you think? And we'll put that review in the show notes, by the way. Please read it, including myself.
Aaron included. I mean, it's funny. I was in the same boat as you, Aaron, because, you know, people were talking about this when it was originally announced by Criterion. And I was just, for whatever reason, I'd never got around to seeing any John Waters. I don't know why. So this kind of was a reason to, I mentioned on First Time Watchers, I kind of binged some stuff. I started with like Serial Mom and went back. That was one of the newer films, went back and watched, of course, I watched Multiple Maniacs and then Pink Flamingos, and I think I've caught up with Pecker and one other one too. So just a reason to get into it. And it's funny, I actually started with Pink Flamingos, and I started it late at night. I thought I'd get through it, but it was like 10 minutes and I was just snoozing. So it made sense. I think really Multiple Maniacs is a good place to start, either if you're new to John Waters or if you've seen something newer and you want to kind of start somewhere. Cause I think I really talked about it in my review how it's a different movie, I think, than anything else he's done. The big thing I took from it is, you know, of course it's black and white, and he did color from then on. I think Mondo Trasho is in black and white too, but his first movie. And this is his second movie. But I think he really, you know, I just love the small budget nature of it. I mean, he did everything. He, you know, produced it, he shot it, he edited it, he directed it. I mean, he does the whole thing. He wrote, I think he wrote all the dialogue. And it's, you know, going into it, what I saw from this movie as compared to some of his other stuff is he really wears his influences on his sleeve on this movie, because there's a lot of, I mean, there's some of The Gospel According to Matthew in it.
Right, just
the black and white aesthetic and Pasolini. And you've got I saw, of course, especially late, I won't really say what it is. I think it's a nice moment not to spoil, but, you know, some surrealism.
Oh, sure.
especially late, you know. And I don't think he has as much of that later on. You know, comparisons to, of course, he was into Bergman, Russ Meyer, of course, Swedish erotica. A lot of that is covered in the supplements. But mm-hmm. I think it's this one more so than the other movies, because as soon as you get into like Pink Flamingos, I like Flamingos a lot, but I see it more of as a, you know, here's the filth. I'm just bringing the filth with this one. I'm just going to shock mm-hmm. you as much as I can. And I think he actually, you see some of his influences more in Multiple Maniacs. So yeah, I think it's fun for that reason.
He said in the commentary that after Flamingos, he decided to kind of chill out with that, because he'd done all he could. You know, he'd sufficiently shocked people. And if he went further, he would just be, it would have been a career ender. So,
right. That's right.
So Eric, I take it you're a big fan.
I am, yeah. I'm definitely a huge fan of Waters, not just his work, but his as a person. You know, he's mm-hmm. kind of like, I don't know, it's hard to say that his, how do I talk about his work? It's not good.
yep. We actually watched it together.
Not,
but,
right, but that's not cool. The point. Yeah. That's really not the point. And he's almost, it's almost like, I was trying to think of a correlation of another filmmaker. It's more like, I guess, like Kevin Smith, actually. You could look at where that's he's got point. A couple of film standouts, but it's really more about him, the person, at this point. Huh. And I feel that that's the same way with Waters. Like, I love his art. You know, I've read several of his books. I've seen him do live monologue. He came to Burlington to the Flynn. He did a Christmas tour. Talking about Christmas stuff, and it's just he's just an amazing guy and a personality and a force and I hadn't seen Multiple Maniacs. Kind of the earliest film of his that I'd seen was Pink Flamingos, and I just hadn't caught up with his earlier works. I'd seen, you know, Polyester on through.
And speaking of VHS, I mean, I think this was only on VHS. It was never on DVD.
That's
I don't
right.
even know if
right.
it was on VHS, but I think.
Yeah,
it was,
I mean, and he's not been good about his distribution deals, obviously, mm-hmm. because his films are just languish, you know, and aren't released. So it's great that Criterion, you know, it's interesting that they chose this film, mm-hmm. but it might have a lot to do with kind of what's available and what's, you know, what you can use.
Right, what they could get the rights. That's the thing with Mondo Trasho, his first movie, is, you know, all the music he used, you know, it's probably never going to see release because of the, you know, the rights issues.
Yeah.
So.
And again, this, you know, in no way is Multiple Maniacs a good film. Just be straightforward. It's really not.
I think that's fair.
Yep.
But there's something there. There's something that's happening there. And it's transgressive, and I think that's mm-hmm. that's really the point here, is that John Waters has a very, you know, it's something that he says in all of his films. There is a group of outsiders.
Right.
It's mm-hmm. very, you know, it's anarchy. It's film anarchy. He would fully admit that. He fully admits. He's like, these aren't good films. This is what I'm doing. I'm putting something in your face, and mm-hmm. and it's a totally opposite these kind of societal norms, you know, like here's this group of people that are just gonna, you know, do crazy insane stuff, and I just want to push against boundaries, and so that's mm-hmm. what he does, and I appreciate that. And there's, you know the mechanics of filmmaking, you know, aren't there, obviously, as his
with
career.
The zooms.
Yeah, I mean,
four all zooms.
It's a little amateurish, yeah.
Yeah, as he progresses as a filmmaker, he starts working with actual people that can operate cameras and run audio, and his story, you know, his dialogue and things start getting more refined, and, mm-hmm. and you know, things get, you know, more mainstream or easier to watch, perhaps.
Yeah. I mean, I could watch Serial Mom or Pecker with my wife, but I would never show Multiple Maniacs or especially Pink Flamingos, you know?
Yeah. But there are images, there's scenes in Multiple Maniacs that are just forever burned into my brain now.
Yeah.
Yeah, one in particular.
Don't forget to...
Don't
forget to clean your rosary beads.
That's right.
Yeah, that one too. Yeah, I was thinking of... We'll just say a little crustacean scene, but
oh yes,
yeah, and so there's those aspects to the film, but yeah, I mean, you mentioned Pecker, actually, that's my favorite John Waters film. I absolutely adore that film. Most people would probably not name that as their favorite. I love that film, and there's just something about it that I, you know, I'm a big Christina Ricci fan too, and that was that time period where
that's right,
she was like the it girl, you know.
She was, I mean, he kind of got more with that, and like Serial Mom, he just got more satirical, I think, and he had something to say, I think, with each of those movies, you know, specific. Like to me, it was just, you know, fame can destroy art, and you know that's what I really took away from Pecker. It was nice to see John Connor in there too.
And I think that I think that with Maniacs, he really just kind of captures the, you know, we see the hippie films with you know, all these music documentaries, or we just talked about Blow Up last week, that has hippie/mod culture, but this is a different kind of culture that you don't see in film, because it's there's a little bit of the art scene, the Warhol/hippie scene, but it's really not that. It's kind of the burnout scene, and he even mentioned in his commentary. And by the way, it's amazing that we get this commentary. A new commentary from a living filmmaker from a film in the 60s. That's just great. And John Waters is just
he does a great commentary. Yeah,
yeah, he's just fun to listen to. He has great things to say. But he talked about how that film failed on the grindhouse cult circuit because it was too artsy. And meanwhile, it was too culty and grindhousey for the arts. You know, you couldn't watch this as a double feature with a Pasolini, even though it's clear that there's an influence. So I think, as you said, Eric, it's not a good film. It's not a, you know, this is not a it's an auteur, but it's not at his peak. But I think it's a worthwhile and relevant film. It's just a distinct piece of art. And I actually, even though I didn't love the film, I appreciated it, and I just thought I was seeing something special. So I think it was definitely worth inclusion, and hopefully there'll be more. I think Flamingos is probably likely.
That would be amazing. I think that's kind of where I was hoping they were going to go. It's really, you know, see how many they might do. I mean, I know that how do they make those decisions? They have so many things to choose from. But
yeah, and so many of them are out of print too. Flamingos is available, but like, you know, Polyester and Female Trouble, some of them are out of print. So you wonder if they're going to get the rights to them. Of course, there's the New Line part of it too. That might make it tough.
Well, that's the thing,
right?
One thing that's, you know, I was thinking about this contextually, because you're right, you know, this isn't a polished film. It's not, you know, one that doesn't really stand the test of time. But what you have to remember is that no one had ever done anything like this. It's in a, you know, we live in a post Jackass world, you know?
Right.
And so this, the kind of things that you're seeing in his films, you know, you can go on YouTube and watch people popping blackheads all day if you want to. I mean, like, that's the world that we live in now. And so that didn't exist, you know, at the time that this film was made. So, and just contextually, it's like something that was just really different and it stands out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I like how it's apolitical, you know, he doesn't, he's not really left or right. He's just, you know, making fun of everybody. I think in my review, I made the South Park connection.
Yeah.
You know, cause he'll take anybody. Anybody's ripe for derision.
So and I love that, you know, as you mentioned, he wrote every line of dialogue, and this is very much John Waters, but everybody speaks with like the same intonation. So everybody speaks like John Waters probably did. And I could just see those rehearsals, him saying, okay, say it like this. And, like what? And like this. So it was a lot of fun. You know, again, not a masterpiece, but you know, people like to ask, is this worth Criterion treatment? I'd say for sure. So
it is.
Well, we have a couple newsish kind of things. So sorry, getting my shit straight here. So, okay, well, we don't have a new release this week. We have we kind of have a new release. We have the Demme films, Young Girls of Rochefort and Umbrellas of Cherbourg are being split from the box set, and they're coming out this Tuesday. And so, yeah, I'm sure they're worth talking about, but we're just going to kind of skip those. And then we have a little bit of a break. Then we have Woman of the Year and Buena Vista Social Club the week after. So I'm looking forward to both of those. Actually, Woman of the Year just got a really rave review from DVD Beaver. So,
cool.
So we had some fun things. We had Amy Heckerling did a closet video, and I always love these. She got a little shit on because she was kind of chill, and I think some people said, what is she on? But I think that's just the way she is. I think she's just a chill person, and that's her personality. That's not too far removed from Cher from Clueless. So did you guys get to watch this?
Yeah, I did check it out. I had to note some of the films because I kind of lose track. She focused on, I think the first thing she picked up was Ivy Deloney, if I'm saying that correctly, from
I've heard worse.
from Fellini, of course, and she mentioned the Mean Streets influence. She also picked up Naked Lunch. Mm. She was praising Tokyo Story. I just watched that recently, which was cool. Ace in the Hole, she was talking about.
Right.
She picked up the DVD. She's going between DVD and Blu-ray, so I always wonder, you know, when people are picking up discs, do they have a Blu-ray player? Are they just playing DVDs? But
we don't see what they put in the bag, but I hope that they're putting Blu-rays. That would just rub me the wrong way. That would irk me.
Yeah, if you had the choice, I know. I've been such a format snob, but now I'm like collecting VHS.
Yeah. Well, there weren't VHS, or maybe there were the two VHS that we talked about. So
yeah, oh yeah, I wonder if those are still in the closet somewhere.
Snag them.
Yeah, I think they're in the trash can.
Yeah, she picked up 8.5. I like the line that she said. She said, "How creativity can make you a jerk." And I think the last shot was of Showa, so it looks like she grabbed Showa. So
yeah, that's quite a contrast from those.
Yeah.
So yeah, I always enjoy the director's closet. Of course, people like to speculate. Does this mean we're going to get some Heckerling in the collection? And I think this has come up before. But I forget the clues, but I think people speculated that maybe Clueless or something. Probably not Clueless, but
no, but that would be a weird one.
Fast Times, maybe.
Yeah, I wonder.
Fast Times. It still doesn't seem right. I don't know.
Yeah.
Have they ever done like a contest so you could, you know, win like 2 minutes in the closet or something? They should.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be great?
It's always people involved with film.
God, yeah. Sure, yeah. No, I think
just take the whole shelf and scoop it.
That's the thing, right?
I'll take
I own
these.
Them all, but I would still grab everything. I think it's always fun though. But you know, as far as Amy Heckerling, there's a lot of rumors about 16 Candles coming. So I think if that floodgate is opened, then you know, why not Fast Times or course, probably a lot of people will get a little persnickety about that. So there is also a letterbox list, and this was from somebody named R Criterion. I don't know who this is. I don't know if they're connected to the Criterion Collection, but they put together this is the Reddit group for Criterion. So they took a lot of the top 10 list, and they picked a top 100 Criterion films picked by celebrities. So I think it's not very scientific, because basically you're just going by what was in the collection at the time and what somebody's whim was. But number one is Brazil, then 8.5, Seven Samurai, The Third Man, Ahazard, Balthazar, Grief of a Shelter, La Ventura, Night of the Hunter, Fanny and Alexander, Battle of Algiers, Rules of the Game, and so on and so on. I'll put the link in the show notes. So did you look at this list? Think it's is this good for a Criterion list?
Yeah, I mean, Brazil being number one is kind of surprising, but I guess, you know, that's a lot of people have seen Brazil. Not that it's not worthy, but it looks like the way they did it was if it was ranked number one, it was given 10 points, and if it was ranked number 10, it was given 1 point. So like you said, not really scientific, but you know, representative, I think, for the most part, of what people think are really great films.
Yeah, also Brazil's been in the collection a while. I think it's in a lower spine. You know, if say Persona wasn't had been in there from the beginning, I think it might make the list. So yeah, it's not a very scientific thing. A lot of people do talk about the Reddit group, and sometimes not in the most pleasant light. But I think they're fine. I think they do a lot of collaborative projects. They did some sort of, I think they ranked the Criterion Collection at one point. Based on their members. So that was interesting. So, all right, well, moving along, we also had, and this is not Criterion specific, but I think it's relevant. So Artificial Eye posted their box set for the Tarkovsky series. And
And it looks nice.
It does look nice. Yes. Of course, we know that the Stalker transfer had some problems, and we know that, we're pretty confident that it's going to come out on Criterion. I know that there's been some hate thrown at Artificial Eye for this this set, but from what I understand, the other releases are fine. They're not bad. So of course this is Region B, people, so don't get too excited. Do you think Criterion could maybe do this, please?
Yeah, I mean they have. So I mean, looking at the list, of course they have Solaris, they have Andrei Rublev and Ivan's Childhood on disc, and then mm-hmm. Of course rumored Stalker. Is Mirror on Filmstruck? I can't remember. I don't think it is.
I don't remember either. I'm gonna check.
I don't think it is, but then like The Sacrifice and Nostalgia, if I'm saying that one correct, those are both from Kino. So they'd have to change some rights to be able to release a box set like that, but boy, would that be amazing.
Well, I think all the Tarkovskys were with Kino, so I think there has been I can't speak for all the films. I don't work for them, and I probably would have signed a NDA if I did. But I think so. I'm actually checking Mirror, and it is there. Yeah, it is on Filmstruck. So,
okay. I mean, those seem like definite possibilities. I wouldn't be surprised if they just released it without the Kino stuff. Because they have most of it, and maybe they get the rights to Nostalgia and The Sacrifice and release it all, or they just mm-hmm. Release the ones they have. But yeah, I mean, yeah. And those are later Tarkovsky, so you could do the early to mid stuff, and then
sure,
if they ever got the rights to the other, release another couple titles. But
yeah, they have Solaris, Stalker, The Mirror, Ivan's Childhood, and Rublev on, and also The Steamroller and The Violin. Which is that a short? Oh, it's a
yeah, that's like his first movie. I think it's like 45 minutes. I haven't seen it.
Okay, cool. Are you a Tarkovsky fan, Eric? It's okay if you aren't.
I can't say I'm a fan. I've seen a couple of things, but I'd like to see more. I mean, that's kind of my life. I'd like to see more. I need to figure out how to stop time.
Yeah.
So I can do that.
I don't know if I think maybe Solaris would be up your speed, but they're very slow and cerebral, so they're not for everybody. If you like beautiful art films, a lot of imagery, then Stalker might be worth a try. But
we're looking at this set, a picture of it. You can't tell that we're doing that in the podcast. But I love the idea of special sets, and they're always, it's like they're beautiful, it's tactile, I get all of that. But then it's like it comes down to a pragmatic like shelf space issue. So that's kind of it's like a push and pull. I'm like,
right.
If it's something I really adore, then I'm sure I'll get it. But mm-hmm. It's always that it's a tough.
Well, looking at the set, the thing I like about it is it looks like it's the same width or very close to a regular disc. You see how the discs would fit in there? So I wonder if they made that with that in mind.
I appreciate that.
It's close anyway. It's not like the the giant, like a Hitchcock set, or I have like the Ben-Hur one mm-hmm. that's just Ben-Hur, but it's just so unwieldy because it's so wide.
Is that like the Lawrence of Arabia one? That's basically
kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I have, of course, Zatoichi always comes up with big packaging and the Trilogia. But I'm actually staring at a bowling ball of Big Lebowski, and I love it.
Yeah.
I haven't watched the disc in years, but it's decoration in my living room. So
you gotta have at least a couple of those. It's just as you're saying, Eric, as it goes along and you get so many of those, it's like there's nowhere to put them. Put it on your shelf. It's just
The Guillermo, I love the Guillermo. I mean, it's so beautiful, and you open it up, but then it's like I try to put it on my shelf, and I'm like, damn it,
yeah, it doesn't fit anywhere.
All right. Well, there were some Phantom pages that went up, and I think these are becoming interesting. In fact, I'm going to just say that, in fact, Ryan Gallagher from Criterion Cast commented about these on Criterion Cast, and I think we've speculated about this before, that they might be related more to Filmstruck than to the library. So I think maybe they're putting these up for Filmstruck. Mm. So, and I think that might be where these come from. So first we have Michael Winterbottom. Are you familiar with him, guys?
I love that much. His name is the best.
Winterbottom.
Yeah,
it rolls off.
I'd be curious of the etymology of that.
Yeah,
right.
Well, have you seen 24-Hour Party People?
That's the one I need to see.
I saw it a very long time ago. Yeah,
it's really good. That, if you're into like punk music or punk scene, well, this is more post-punk and kind of new wave, baggy Stone Roses kind of thing. Yeah, he did that. He did Code 46. He did a few things. He did Tristram Shandy, A Cock and Bull Story, which was actually very, very excellent, but not many people have seen that. He's done some documentaries, but I think that a lot of people, well, actually, Ryan said that he thinks it's for the trip to Italy, which is going to be on Filmstruck. And by the way, we should mention that, again, that Ryan's posted the whole month of what's coming out on Filmstruck on Criterion Cast, so that link will again be in the show notes. But I guess he's not on your radar. So have you seen the Trip movies? There's two of them so far.
Those, yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. Those are like I think those would be good date ones. I'm just kind of waiting to check those out. But where would you start, Aaron? Would you start with 24-Hour Party People? Because I haven't seen any of his movies yet.
Yeah, or maybe Welcome. Yeah, yeah. I'd start with 24-Hour Party People, and maybe Welcome to Sarajevo. Actually, I saw the first of the Trip movie, and it's Steve Coogan and Rob Brydon. And it was okay. It was funny. I actually skipped the second one because I heard it was basically just a rehash of the first one, and now they're doing another one to Spain. So,
right.
Yeah, I saw the first one, and, you know, it was okay. It's worth checking out. Yeah. I didn't fall asleep. Yeah.
So there's that. Helps. Yeah, speaking of Tarkovsky.
Yeah.
Yeah, they are what they are, and so if you like their humor, Coogan and Brydon, then you're probably up for it. He did Alan Partridge, that was a British series. So if you like that, then you would like this. There are other fandom pages. There's one for Nadav Kurtz, and she's done. I think it's a she. I don't know actually, but that's an editor that's done a lot of short films. So that's again evidence. It's possibly one of the short films that's coming to Criterion. Is going to be her, and she did direct. She or he did one called Paraiso a couple years ago, documentary short about immigrants, which seems up Mexican immigrants, which is a Criterion kind of topic lately.
Sure.
And the other one was Rosie Reed Hillman, and she has only directed or worked on one film, and it's called it's Scottish, so I'm going to butcher this.
Kalich,
yeah, Kalich. I don't know. Clike, probably, or something like that. So that's a documentary about somebody out in Scotland. So, and actually, that looked pretty intriguing. Not sure if that's a Criterion type of title, but I don't know if it'd be popular enough. Of course, they have some pretty obscure titles, and in fact, might as well just. Well, are you excited about either of these or?
Yeah, I mean these. Neither the names I'm familiar with at all. So.
Yeah,
I figure we're going to get some blank stares today. So, that note, there's a movie also called Macunema, which is 1969. So there was a NYU professor, Robert Stamm. He had a lecture and he mentioned that Criterion's going to release Macunema. It's a where's this from? Yeah, as you
Brazil,
can see, this is
right?
Brazil, right? I knew that.
It would be the first Brazil.
Which was not in front of me. So yeah, Joaquim Pedro de Andrade only has 1,000 ratings on IMDb, so definitely on the obscure side. I wonder if it could be a Filmstruck type of release. Although I think any Brazilian cinema would be welcome. I've seen a few. In fact, I really enjoyed one last year. Neon Bull was amazing.
Oh yeah, I need to see that.
It's good. Yeah. And you would like the ending. I'm just going to say that.
Yeah, I've heard a lot about that film.
Yeah, I think it's still on
and
Netflix.
And I just haven't caught it yet. Yeah.
Yeah. Go watch it, but not with a family. Well, maybe with the family, but yeah.
Depends on the family.
Yeah. Right, the ending might be a little much for them. We'll just say it's a happy ending. So anyway, it looks interesting. I love world cinema, and I love when they introduce me to new stuff. So So yeah, I think it could be cool. So all right, well, that's our newsish stuff. Not a whole lot. In fact, somebody called me out. They said that the lack of news was my fault because I went on vacation.
it's all your fault, Aaron.
It is. Yeah, they were waiting for me to
generate your own some fake news.
That's right.
Yeah, why not? Today's sure. Yeah. Hairspray coming to the Criterion next week.
You heard it here first.
All right. Well, should we get into our short takes? You guys ready?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Eric, our guest, you want to start with
yours? Sure. Yeah, I'd love to. So this week, I took another look at Rushmore. And the reason I did was because I watched it with my daughter, Zandra. She's 11. And we've started to, I mean, she's, I don't know if she's a, you know, hard to know if she's a typical 11-year-old when it comes to the stuff she's seen. Probably not, considering her parents. but, you know, she cut her teeth on Miyazaki and, you know, started watching John Hughes films when she was, you know, eight. So probably not, you know, atypical in any regard. But we've been watching, you know, she loves romantic comedy. She loves teen stuff. And, you know, recently there's been some great things. We just watched Edge of 17.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
Which, you know, we're kind of, you know, yeah, she's 11. But if it's just like language stuff, we're not, you know, I'm not going to, you know, we're still choosy and we're still kind of monitoring what she's looking at. And
yeah, this is rated R, you know, which I didn't realize.
Honestly, I'm sure it's silly. A soft R. It's completely, they talk about hand jobs and they say, you know, they say fuck like three times. Like it's ridiculous that it's R.
Yeah.
But we, you know, in the last couple of years, actually one of the best films I've seen in a long time, Me, Earl, and the Dying Girl. We watched that film together. She read the book, you know. So again, it's like she was kind of, I'm like, I started thinking, okay, now I'm kind of opening up into a lot of other options. You know, I've seen Breakfast Club.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know, Rushmore, I think that's a great, one of my favorite films. And I kind of was saying, okay, maybe this is an entry point into Criterion, you know. So I started thinking about, you know, what are the, you know, from a kid's, you know, or a young person's perspective,
what would connect with
her? What's an entry? I mean, she's seen, you know, Moonrise Kingdom, you know, she has.
Yeah.
And then I started thinking about like, what are the other Criterion films that she's seen? You know, we watched Carnival of Souls together.
Right.
You know, The Black Stallion, of course, she's seen that.
Yeah.
So I started thinking, I was like, if I wanted to do like a kid's Criterion starter pack, you know, what would be some good entry points? So I made a short list of things. One was Rushmore, of course. I feel like, you know, it's a good entry point for anyone, really.
Right. Right.
I also thought, you know, Watership Down. You know,
yes and no.
It depends on the kid.
Some dark themes there, but yeah.
Right. You know, and again, of course, I'm thinking about personally about my kid and her entry points.
Right, right.
That's probably not for everyone.
My daughter loves animals. I'm going to wait on that. She's over the moon about animals.
Yeah.
So I'll wait.
It's probably not for everyone. I'm not, Jellyfish Eyes is not on my list. It might be for some other people.
I could see that for sure.
That's
one of Aaron's favorites.
Yeah, I heard that. Yeah. I heard that. It's one of your favorites. Hoop Dreams, actually, I thought would be another great entry point, especially not just for the collection, but for documentaries.
Yeah.
I feel like that's very, you know, relatable.
Yeah.
And there's a lot going on with that.
That's a great pick. I think because there's a lot of great documentaries in the collection, you know, where would be a good place to start? That's a really good pick.
Yeah. And another one that I was thinking of is Red Shoes.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because it's just so, you know, the visual, it's striking, it's, you know, the music, all those things.
Right.
Might be a good entry point.
Yeah.
Have you seen Zazie Denzel Metro?
That's a good one.
No.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to ask you if you guys had any other, as far as like kid entry points, what other things that you think about
that's
in the collection?
That's a great pick. Yeah. That's like, it's almost like, you know, like a lot live action cartoon, just the way it moves. It's, that would be a good one.
Mm. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's French, but it's a lot of fun. I'd have to think of some others.
Subtitles are always a consideration. Yeah. You know, that's like we're getting there, but it still like can be a tough call with kids, mm-hmm. of course.
Yeah, it's funny. My daughter, of course, she's a couple years older, and we're kind of in the same boat where we haven't hit Breakfast Club yet, but we just watched 16 Candles. Speaking of that, which she just loved. We're talking recently. I think maybe she was born in the wrong decade.
Yeah, right.
She just loves the 80s movies. Back to the Future is one of her favorites. But I think the next one, I think we're going to go to, and I can't believe we haven't watched it yet, is Moonrise Kingdom. I mean,
that's a great age, one. We saw that in the theater together and absolutely loved it. Yeah. Just getting back to Rushmore, again, one of my favorite films, and seeing it, you know, again, the Blu-ray release, I was actually completely struck that this was made in 1998. I just couldn't justify. It just feels, not that it feels timeless, it just doesn't, it feels so fresh still, and it just works. And, he's able to just create that little world, his little Wes Anderson world, and it just seems separate from, you don't get all the trappings of what you might think of a 90s film, and, it looks beautiful, so it just, I don't know, I just really... Yeah. Of course it holds up. It's one of my favorite films.
Yeah, that's one of my...
Favorite Anderson? Favorite Wes Anderson?
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I think that's right before he really started getting into the too weird... Not that there's anything wrong with that, but the overly indie cute. So I think this was kind of on the way, but it was grounded in a pretty realistic story. Well, kind of realistic.
Yeah. And my daughter loved it. She got done, she said, "I loved it." She was looking at the map inside. So we were pulling that out and looking at it while we were watching it, and that was great.
Cool.
That's cool.
Well, what about you, Mark?
Well, I'll be a little bit boring because I know you guys have talked about this, but it's really, other than watching some Duvivier films, it's the only other Criterion I really got a chance to check out. We talked about the Before trilogy on First Time Watchers, so I really just got to check out Before Sunrise and some of the special features. But, I hadn't rewatched any of these movies yet, Aaron. It was, I saw Sunrise, years after it came out. I saw Sunset, and then I saw I actually watched both of those just before Midnight came out, so I kind of came to them a little bit late. But it was great to just hang out with these people again. I love, and it's funny, whenever I watch a Linklater film, I feel like I'm hanging out with Richard Linklater too. I'm not just hanging out with the people on screen.
Mm-hmm.
I love his writing, and I know it's not just him. It's, it's a collaborative between the three of them, but the way they speak, the philosophical nature of it, the immediately you're drawn into just what they're saying, their outlook on life, getting to know them. And something I didn't notice, because the first time I'd seen the movie, the beginning part with the German couple that are fighting is really foreshadowing, the third movie,
right?
Which is a really nice, kind of book in there. And they kind of look at each other like they're above that, they're young, they're not at that point yet. But it's nice to see that connection. Overall, it's a great movie. I need to see Before Sunset again. I think that's probably my favorite. This one's a little bit longer. I don't think it feels its length at all. I just enjoyed it quite a bit again. One thing I did notice is I think Jesse, something that made me laugh, is Jesse's such a guy at the end, towards the end of the movie, at the end of the night, because he's just trying to get in her pants. It's just, and I'm like, okay, at least they didn't get away from that. They stuck with the reality. So, for pseudo-intellectual, whatever you want to call it, one thing I did notice too is I really like the poetic vagrant, I call them,
that's great. Into. Yeah,
I feel like Linklater is trying to kind of make a point of why, artistic people, they make these beautiful artistic things, but they're on the outskirts. They it's hard for them to subsist in society. I think he's making a comment there.
So, that's a very Austin-like kind of vagrant, probably too. That might be based on somebody in Austin. So
It would have fit in with Slacker very well.
Yep. Having just watched The Purge and then having watched this trilogy, I kept on seeing Ethan Hawke in The Purge. I kept on waiting for him to just like buddy up with the the bad guys and just start walking and talking about the philosophy of purging every year and all that.
Yeah.
It was weird to see him in that role. I my thoughts on this trilogy are very well documented now. I'm a very big fan, and I enjoyed revisiting all three, and I did enjoy seeing the little how they talk to each other, and because you miss that if you watch them over the years. So, Eric, sure. You like the Before series?
Yeah, I haven't cracked the seal on that set. Just got it in the mail and a little while ago, and I've seen the first two. I haven't seen the third one, so I'm excited to watch all three. I saw the first one in the theater back in college, and just was blown away. I mean, I was a Linklater fan at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, big time. So, you know, just going to see whatever, but I love the quietness of it, the personal nature of it. It's like,
mm-hmm.
you know, very different than something like Slacker where, you know, he seems like he had more to prove or something. And this is just mm-hmm. that intimacy and the interaction between two people. It's just, yeah, it's special.
Yeah.
I really like that series.
Good stuff. Yeah. I'm so glad that Criterion got their hands on it. So,
oh yeah.
Yeah.
Well, mine
and
is.
Hoping for more too.
I'm sorry.
I want to follow this them every 9 years. I hope they make a new movie.
Okay. That's something we might talk about someday. I kind of like
Seven Up. They just keep doing.
Right. Yeah. Yep. We actually brought that up on the Midnight Show. But I hope they stop. But that's me. Well, mine is Charade, Stanley Donen's 1963 classic, which is pretty. It's one of those that's it's in the public domain because they messed up with the copyright, so you can get this everywhere. And beware, I would not get anything other than the Criterion, or I think there's a studio release that's the same transfer. But yeah, this is one that's been sitting on my shelf for years now, and I just hadn't gotten around to it. And I guess it's just because I expected it to be kind of Hitchcock light. Mm. And well, okay, that is kind of what it is. Nothing really against that. Have you guys seen it?
I have, yeah.
I haven't, actually. I think I'll watch this with my kid. I don't know.
Yeah. It's an early spine.
You could, maybe, yeah. It's Stanley Donen. It has Cary Grant, Audrey Hepburn. It actually has a pretty big cast. It has Walter Matthau, George Kennedy, James Coburn. So there's a good bit of comedy. There's a good, dynamic between Hepburn and Grant, so... and it's very well written. It's in that it's, as far as the mystery goes, it's very Hitchcockian. but I wouldn't, and some people do kind of elevate it. They compare it to North by Northwest. I wouldn't quite put it at that level. I just think it's a little more Stanley Donen-ish, a little lighter, a little fluffier. It doesn't have the Hitchcock edge that I think even in his lightest, and there's not many light Hitchcock films. Not much fluff there, but if you've seen, you know, of course, the other Donen's, like he did Singing in the Rain, right, and Two for the Road, which also has Hepburn. He has a lot more fluff, a little more upbeat, and I'd say this is more of a lighthearted comedy / thriller. So I thought it was good. I wouldn't complain about it being in the Criterion Collection, but I wouldn't compare it to anything of Hitchcock's. So. All right, well, that's our short takes. All right, so we're going to get into Filmstruck here. As I mentioned, Ryan posted the monthly schedule, so go check that out. But we have a few things here. And so we have the main channel and the Criterion channel. And I think the main channel, there might be a few whiffs from you guys and maybe me as well. Mm-hmm. First off, Eric, do you have Filmstruck?
I don't, no.
Okay, well,
I should do that.
Get the trial. That's become
a
joke. But let's start with there's a directed by Martin Ritt section, and it has The Sound and the Fury, Ombre, and Conrack. And I've seen Ombre of those three, which is a good Western, but it's not terrific. I have the Twilight Time of Sound and the Fury.
Yeah, I think isn't Ombre on Twilight Time too? I thought
it
could be wrong.
It is, yeah. But they didn't do HUD or The Spy Who Came in from the Cold, or I think there's a couple other prominent Ritt films. Did he do The Front? I can't remember. So anyway, do you guys have any thoughts on Martin Ritt?
I haven't seen any of these. You know, I have The Twilight Time, just haven't gotten to him yet. I love the book, The Sound and the Fury, the Faulkner book. But
cool. Well, and he did do the front. So yeah, that's why I thought there might be some blank stares here. But don't worry, I have something in store.
Ombre, is that Newman?
It is. Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. My wife's a huge Paul Newman fan, so that's a good reason to watch. Right there.
Yeah.
And besides, ombres are very much in the news, especially the bad ones. So,
bad ombres.
So we also have documentaries by Ross McElwee. I know him from Sherman's March and Bright Leaves, but they also listed a whole bunch of films I've never heard of. Apparently, he's worked for quite a while. But there's Charlene, Backyard, Photographic Memories, Something to Do with the Wall, which is not new. Time Indefinite, and 6 o'clock News. So have you guys seen any Ross McElwee?
I haven't. No. The only one I really recognize was Photographic Memory because I remember people talking about it when it came out. I just never got to it. And, of course, the cover made me think of Camera Person, a Kieslowski film. But other than that, no.
No.
Nothing.
I'm feeling very ignorant.
No, don't worry. No, it's okay. That's every week.
No, it's just more of my needing to stop time or just quit my job and...
Well, I think that's part of the point of Filmstruck really is finding these, if you subscribe and mm-hmm. finding these filmmakers you've just never delved into and they just give you an excuse to do it.
Yeah. Great.
I think Sherman's March is one that's listed a lot and as far as prominent documentaries of the last 20 years or so. I actually haven't seen it. It's a pretty big omission because I'm in the South and it's about Sherman's March, the South. It plays locally a lot and I just haven't gotten to it. So... All right, well, the next one is The Lives of Actors. And so let me just say that there was a kind of a mixed bag here. I hadn't seen this grouping, so I went ahead and found some other actor movies. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is our speed round. So we're in speed round. So Eric, Mark, we each get 10 seconds to chime in. So I'm just going to start listing movies. And if you haven't seen it or you have nothing to say, just pass. So you ready? Ready for speed round?
Let's speed it. Let's do it.
All right. The music's starting. All right, Swingers, Mark.
Haven't seen it, sadly.
Really? Eric?
It's a 90s omission for me.
Yes, I have.
Okay, all right.
I don't know.
I just remember he uses the word baby a lot. The Party, Eric.
No, I haven't seen that.
Mark?
Nope.
All right.
No, I haven't even heard of it.
Pass here, too. I don't remember who directed it, but all right. Theater of Blood, Mark.
I think that's in the Monsters and Mad Men box set, isn't it? I think it is.
I know it's Arrow. I don't know, but have you seen it? It's a Vincent Price.
I haven't
Price.
Seen it.
This is why I added some films. Eric, Theater of Blood?
God, no, I'm embarrassed. No, I haven't seen it.
It's another the Vincent Price.
I know. Yeah,
these are all about actors. That's the common thread. So.
Gotta get on that.
Yeah. I haven't either, but I have The Arrow, and I actually almost watched it when I saw this, but time. Okay, well, I think we might get something here. Withnell and I. Eric.
No.
Oh, ooh.
I know.
This would be totally up your alley.
Yes,
I know.
Mark. Yeah.
It's the one that's languishing.
Yeah, this one makes me want to drink.
Yeah, yeah. This is the drinking game movie, best alcoholic movie ever.
Yes.
So yeah, you got to watch this one, Eric.
Yes, yes. All right, moving it up on my list.
And I'm going to be just passing the last two. I, Sudden Fear. Anybody? All right.
No, Joan Crawford, Jack Palance, cool.
The Big Knife.
That one didn't. RJ brought that up last week. If I remember, and yeah, this one I don't remember how it came up, but if it was an Robert Aldrich connection or what, but out of print on DVD, so would love to see it come as a physical release.
Cool.
If you were talking about Crocodile Dundee, then I could say yes. But
there is a Big Knife in Crocodile Dundee. Yeah. All right. Well, we have some other actor
movies.
That works
for speed round. That's a great part about it. Yeah.
So, okay, remember, 10 seconds. And in fact, if you go over your 10 seconds, then Mark's going to stab you. Okay, All About Eve, Mark.
Blind Spot.
Really?
I have the Blu-ray, Blind Spot, yep.
Eric.
No.
Okay, all right. No. I'll just say Betty Davis, it's
yep.
a good film. All right, Eric, Sunset Boulevard.
Yes, yeah.
Oh, you're supposed to comment. Do you have a 10-second comment about it?
I don't even know what I'm doing. I'm sorry. I showed up really drunk today.
I made breakfast and Eric hit the souse. So.
Yeah, it's just hammered. I don't know. Something about a staircase. I don't know.
Yeah, staircase.
Okay, yeah, that's a big deal. Mark, yep. Sunset Boulevard.
It's a great movie. The beginning part puts me on edge. So
yeah.
It makes me want to go swimming.
I'll just say, very quotable, a very fun, over-the-top performance by Swanson. So,
yeah,
all right, Mark, this is one we've talked about before, Mulholland Drive.
Wow, yeah, we spent a lot of time on that, so, yeah, could be my favorite Lynch. It's either that or Blue Velvet.
All right,
I think it's Mulholland.
Oh, my God. Is it my favorite? Could be my favorite. I think it's genius. Mm-hmm. The scene in the alley with the homeless person gets
God.
Me every time.
Yeah,
and I just I just love. Yeah. He's my favorite director. I love him.
All right, you went over 10 seconds, so Mark,
damn
you have to stab Eric.
Stab.
All right, the next one is Inland Empire. Eric, if you're still alive, Inland Empire.
Yes, I mean emphatically yes. I it's just Laura Dern, amazing. Mm. I I'll shut up now.
All right, Mark.
I think it's in Region B, out of print, needs a rewatch. It's like 3 hours.
Yeah, I have the DVD, actually. It's a mindfuck. Would love to see it on Criterion. So, speaking of mindfuck, Synecdoche, New York. Mark.
Wow. Was that a Mark or an Eric?
That was a Mark. That was me. I'm sorry.
That is another mindfuck, and I need to see it again. I don't even know what I watched at the end of that movie.
Yeah, I mean... same thing here. It's been forever since I saw it. And Philip Seymour Hoffman, I mean, R.I.P.
Yeah, yeah.
Missed that guy.
Yeah, I do love this film, and I think I get it. I have watched it twice. Very deep, very bleak. Not a very uplifting film. So,
No.
All right. You might be blind spots here, but Millennium Actress. Eric?
No, I need to see that.
I haven't even heard of it.
It's animated. It's Toshi Kon, and it's about Setsuko Hara and other Japanese actors, actresses. So yeah, it's brilliant. Okay, I think we'll have something here. Being John Malkovich, Eric.
God, it's been a while, but yeah, that's that. You know, it's that thing that you saw a million times and need to see again. And you know, Cusack. I mean, come on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
Mark.
I saw it once. I had it on HD DVD, and then Criterion released it, and I haven't watched it since, so I need to see it again.
All right, you guys are giving me nothing. I'll just say Malkovich, Malkovich, Malkovich.
there you go.
All right, Chaplin. Mark.
Chaplin in general or the movie?
The movie Chaplin.
Oh, I haven't seen it.
This is about actors. Boy.
with
Robert
Downey.
Yeah,
Downey plays him. Yeah, I haven't seen that one.
Eric?
I've seen Chaplin movies, but not the...
I saw it in the theater. I don't know. Meh.
Really?
That's all I have to say.
I saw it a long time ago. I saw it before I saw Chaplin movies, so I need to see it again to see if it holds up. But I did like it back then. All right. I know we have something here. Birdman, Eric.
Oh, God.
you're kidding me.
I'm failing. God, how did that... I mean, the fact that that's even, you know, was... That people saw that. I mean, amazing. The fact that enough people could see that because it was nominated
and won.
Steadicam. Hmm. It's probably 10 seconds.
Yeah. Mark, Birdman.
Depression. I still have a piece I want to write about The Revenant and Birdman about being about depression. But, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And the scene with the critic, get over yourself an hour or two.
All right, Eric, you need to stab Mark. this is speed round. My comment
seconds.
Is just great camera work. Chivo has got a good thing going. All right, I'm going to skip a couple of these. How about Singing in the Rain?
I got nothing, man. I can't.
All right, Mark.
I can't do it.
Singing in the Rain, I need to watch it with my kids. We're going through musicals.
Clouds of Sils Maria, Mark.
I love that the cloud scene just killed me. Great performances. I can't wait for Asayas's next.
Yeah, it's just announced. Eric.
Haven't seen it.
Oh. Surprise.
Sorry. Yeah.
Well, it's on Criterion, so
yeah,
I agree that kind of surprisingly divisive. I know some people that I respect that hate this movie. All right, last one.
Don't get the hate.
I know that you guys, I'm going to get something from you this time. Boogie Nights, Eric.
Oh, giant fake penis.
Yeah, of course. That is the correct answer.
And the scene where Bill Macy just shoots himself in the head at that party. God.
Yeah.
So much of that. So much of that.
Mark, Boogie Nights.
Scorsese, but it might still be one of my favorite Paul Thomas Andersons. Love it. Great soundtrack.
Okay, I don't know where Scorsese came from, but...
Well, it's his Scorsese movie.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Okay, yeah.
I get it.
The influence. I get it now. For a second, I thought you... Because then you said Scorsese, then you said PTA, so...
He had a small stroke there for a second.
Yeah. Speak... No pun intended, stroke. Okay, well, that hopefully that played well. I think we all lose that one. So
yeah, I feel like a loser. That's most That's days,
okay.
though.
That's okay. All right, so we're going to get to the Criterion Channel, and there was a lot of stuff this week. So we're not going to speed round it, but I'm going to go a little quicker here. So there was a really neat feature, or a collection called The Chaos of Cool, Films of Seijun Suzuki. So did you guys get to watch this? Well, I guess you didn't, Eric, but
no.
Do you like Seijun Suzuki?
I'm not familiar, actually.
Oh, he would be up your alley.
I think he would be.
Especially with, I'd probably start with Brandon DeKill. That was my first, too. Mm. It's nuts. It's great.
Or Tokyo Drifter. Yeah, they're both kind of just a lot of style and kind of gorgeous, but they're in the studio system and they make no sense. It's kind of like the Japanese studio, The Big Sleep. You probably didn't see it, but I really liked the intro, which was just basically him talking. And by the way, he died a couple months ago. So rest in peace, Seijun Suzuki. So, okay. So, the next was the short plus feature. And so this one, we had a film called Artun, which was, from Iceland. And then we had My Life as a Dog, Lassie Hallström. So, Mark, did you get a chance to watch Artun?
No, I didn't. Yeah, but we did talk about My Life as a Dog. Well, you did, actually. That was an early Criterion close-up movie. Great coming of age, one of my favorites.
That's right, yeah.
I haven't seen that in a while, probably since the 90s, but great film.
Yeah.
I do, too. Now, Hallström hasn't done a whole lot for me since, but that was his bright spot. Artun actually was among my favorite shorts, I think, I've seen on Filmstruck. It really took me... And it's very much in the same vein as My Life as a Dog, very coming of age, and there's a little bit of I won't give it away, but there's some sexual embarrassment, or shyness, I guess you could say. So that fits well with My Life as a Dog too, with the relationship with Saga. So okay, there was also another digital spine, which actually fits well with last week because they had that film art on Spirit of the Beehive. So this week they actually have Spirit of the Beehive on Criterion, or on the channel, which is not on Blu-ray. So I didn't get a chance to watch to see the transfer. Yeah. But sorry, you guys like Beehive?
Yeah.
Don't know.
Yeah, I do like it a lot. It kind of you guys talked about it last week, and I had a similar feeling with it that I wasn't quite sure what I was watching again, and I think you kind of just need to go into it, you know, knowing that you're watching it from her viewpoint, from a child's viewpoint. So
yeah, I think it's beautiful. So, but we did talk about it last week. Yeah. So, all right. Well,
this is one Eric, where you know they put in the it's like a digital spine. Like all the Criterion releases have a physical spine,
right?
And this one they have a digital spine.
Oh, nice! I like that idea.
Yeah, and if you like Frankenstein, it's a big part of this movie. The original Frankenstein. Cool. So there's a Friday double feature, and this was The Blob and Equinox. So these are B movies. I actually haven't seen Equinox, and I almost watched it, but I heard it was terrible. So
it's terrible.
It's fun, but it's terrible. Fun,
yeah,
is it good?
It's
terrible?
It's like Drinking Game kind of thing. I mean, just for the effects alone, just to witness the spectacle, of the effects. I mean, yeah.
Okay,
it's the kind of thing you throw it on and then you do something else for a little while and then you check it out. And
sure.
Yeah.
Okay, it's a laundry movie.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, maybe I will watch it. And the other one was The Blob. And The Blob, I think, is actually, it's a B-movie, but it's a above average. I think it's a pretty good quality B-movie. Everything came together for The Blob. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Big fan there.
I don't know where I heard recently about the Blob Fest, like in the town. Every year they have a festival.
Yeah.
Heard about that.
Yeah, they do.
And I'm like dying to go because they recreate the scene where everyone's running out of the theater and like it's the everyone runs out. And
Cool. It's in Pennsylvania, right? I think.
Yeah. Oh man, that would be fun.
That would be a blast. I love the song. So,
yes.
All right. Well, and then there is the Essential Art House, which is the big collection of arguably the greatest films of all time. It's probably Criterion's statement as far as that goes. So there were has been on Filmstruck really since the beginning, but they added 10 films, and I noted Cleo from 5 to 7, Henry V, A Man Escaped, Pygmalion, The Magician, Sancho the Bailiff, and People on Sunday. I didn't check if those are all in the group, but they were in the recently added. So anything jump out at you guys there?
Got some watching to do.
a lot of these, you know, are on that top 100 Criterion from the top 10 list on Letterboxd. But
I mean, we're looking at the Filmstruck while we're talking, and I just I'm like, man, I gotta get on this.
It's a lot of good stuff.
Yeah.
It's quite the box set. I mean, I think it runs for people every time there's a 50% off sale. People talk about buying the set itself,
right,
which comes with this gorgeous book. My library has it. And
well, it's like $1,000, isn't it?
Yeah,
and it's all DVD, and a lot of these have been upgraded, and I think probably half of these are on Blu-ray, if not more.
Yeah, no supplements, just the movies and the book.
Yeah.
Well, it's what's great about Filmstruck, you know.
Yeah,
there you go.
It's really true. A true collector will buy Essential Art House, and I know we have listeners and people in our groups that have it, so they're gonna be like, yeah.
Yep.
All right, and there was lastly in the Criterion Channel, there was a dump of Harold Lloyd shorts. I love Harold Lloyd. I think he's just hilarious, but I haven't had a chance to watch any of the new ones that showed up on the service, so I can't wait for that. So, Harold Lloyd fan, Eric?
Safety
Last.
He's silent, silent comedian, very influential. Mm-hmm. In fact, I remember listening to a Ben Stiller interview where he was saying he was influenced by Harold Lloyd, which I thought was cool.
Huh.
Safety Last did a lot of stunts, kind of like a Chaplin, or
I've heard of it. I haven't seen. I've heard of.
Actually,
that.
He's more like Buster Keaton, I'd say.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Yeah. No, definitely worth checking out. So,
all right.
Have you seen any of his shorts, Mark?
I haven't. Nope.
All right.
Now's my time.
Now's your time. Yeah. All right. Well, that's a Criterion Channel, and that's Filmstruck. So we're pretty much done. We just have the legendary piece of flair. So, Eric, this is just any little tidbit that's non-Criterion that you want to share. So you want to go first to get a piece of flair?
Yeah, I do, actually. Recently, this is semi-Criterion related, actually. Watched with the family on Netflix a new series, Abstract: The Art of Design. Have you seen that on there? If you have,
no.
I haven't watched
if
it.
If you don't have the
Netflix anymore,
yeah. So it's an 8-episode series. They're all under an hour, just profiling different folks in the design community. So they'll be like Christoph Niemann for illustration. They kind of do it by, you know, there's like footwear design, Tinker Hatfield, who did all of the all the Air Jordans. He designed all of those.
Oh, cool.
And they actually there's an episode that focuses on Paula Scheer, who did the Criterion logo, works at Pentagram for many years, like huge famous designer.
That's
so
cool.
If you're a fan of documentaries and you're a fan of design or interested, this is an amazing series. Just cinematically, it's really beautiful. But just, you know, the fact that they had access to, you know, they look at interior design, automotive design, and they kind of focus for each of the 8 episodes. It's a fantastic series. Highly recommend it.
Cool. I'm looking it up now. Looks great. Yeah. I love design stuff. And in fact, when we went to MoMA, just looking at the design stuff at MoMA is just tremendous. I love that stuff. So. All right, Mark, what's your piece of flair?
My piece of flair is not really film related, although I think maybe beer and Criterion films go hand in hand. I mean, movies and beer, right? It's a thing. So
fill in the blank and beer.
That's right. So my one of my favorite new styles of beer, and it's not that new, but it's, you know, in the consciousness of beer, it is, I love black IPAs. So I just wanted to give people a shout out. If you're looking for something new to pair with your recent Criterion watch, check out a black IPA. It's a dark malt and hops. And a shout out to a local brewery, Burlington Beer Company. They came out with one called Paper Mache Dream Balloons. They always have these fun, fun names.
That's awesome.
And it's what they did with it is I think they just knocked it out of the park. It's really a 5-star beer, and it's the thing that they did is just a little learning piece. There's something called lupulin, which is it's the yellow gland of the hop plant. So here in Vermont, I know a lot of places too, but we are especially known for our hoppy beers.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. The gland of the hop plant is where the hop acids, alpha and beta, it's like the essential oils. So they actually added some of the it includes lupulin powder in the beer, and it's just absolutely delicious.
Wow.
So if you're looking for, obviously, you know, if you live in Vermont, there's not many of our listeners probably do, but look for a black IPA. I think usually black beer is not hoppy, it's malty.
Right, right.
But the addition of the hops adds, you know, some additional bitterness, and I don't know, I love it. So
cool. Nice. I love IPA. I've never had a black IPA, so I'll check it out.
Either. Yeah, I'm going to have to try that.
Cool.
It's fabulous.
All right. Well, mine is, I'm going to cheat. I have two. So the first one, and I'm kind of cheating because I was out of town last weekend and this would have been mine. I'm a big Rick and Morty fan. And for April Fool's Day, they released season 3, episode 1, and it was awesome. It was hilarious. Mm. And it was as you'd expect from Rick and Morty. In fact, it kind of, a couple things went viral, especially Szechuan sauce from Mulan. So
nice.
It's not a spoiler. You have to watch the episode to get it. And then speaking of bad movies, the other one is that that this week the MST3K new season is coming out. So it's going to be, I think it's going to start Friday. So I backed the Kickstarter, so I get to watch it today. So I'm looking forward to that. So it could be terrible, but I'm still glad it's back.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's it, guys. Yeah. Where can we find you online? Eric, where can we find you?
If you just Google image search Eric Ford and look for like the dorkiest dude, that's where you can
find
me.
That's the guy,
That's him?
No,
okay.
I'm on Instagram. It's eFordVT. You can see all the dumb stuff I do in my life and anything kind of semi-film related. I'm also going to be starting sometime in the near future, starting with Instagram, a feed that will be focused on things that are languishing on VHS. Things only available on VHS.
That's
so
cool.
Look for that.
Very cool.
Yeah,
I did Google image search, and there are a lot of goofy people named Eric Ford, but none of them are you. Maybe I didn't scroll down far enough.
I guess you're not number one.
Yeah, not number one.
No,
not yet.
There's something to aspire to.
Yes.
All right, Mark, what's your cool. Where can we find you online?
Twitter, at Mark Herney, HURNE, Letterboxd, M Herney. Definitely find me there. And of course, I'll talk to Aaron on Criterion Now here and there, and Criterion Close-Up. And I actually have one other piece of flair. I just wanted to let folks know, if you haven't noticed from listening to podcasts and Criterion Now, Criterion Close-Up, Aaron West is a wonderful man. He recently did something really nice for me related to Filmstruck.
I did not.
he's super nice. So just wanted to plug Aaron West as the man.
I have a couple moments, like maybe two a year. So thank you.
There you go.
All right. Well, I'm AWest505 on Twitter. I got to tweet more. I keep telling myself that, but busy life, all these podcasts and going out of town. You can find the show at Criterion_now. You can find it in the Criterion Cast Master Feed, and you can also find Criterion Now on iTunes. So thanks for listening, and thanks for joining us, guys.
Thanks, Aaron. It's a blast.
Thanks a lot. A lot of fun.